Amazon delivery driver, just to let you know, I went to your house just now, then I left a message, a card saying the parcel was in the barbershop, but the guy from the barbershop refused to accept it, so I left on the kebab just downstairs of your house. It's the first one from the left to the right, alright, in the kebab shop. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Hello, internet, and welcome to episode 10 of the High Level Play podcast. I am number one, your confidant, prince among men, apparently, Deck of 49, and joining me today are...
Hello, my name is Karim Kazi. Hello to all my old school fans. It's been a long time. I'm back.
All right, I'm number three then, Dread, as everyone knows me. Hello, once again.
We apologise for the delay. It's been a little while since you've seen anyone apart from me, and I know seeing me solo is probably not good for your health, to be completely honest. Rotated Karim in, who's new to the podcast, new to the Playcast. Karim, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm 24, just finished uni, so a lifetime of gaming has just finished. But hopefully in the afterlife, which is my working career, I'll get a few more games played.
I've never heard my job, any job, compared to as the afterlife. Like, you've died when you go there. I quite like that. That's lovely. What's your favourite game, Kaz?
Ooh, that's a bit of a tough one, but probably Shenmue, I'd have to say.
Oh, I think you've displayed your credentials there in quite a meaningful way. Dredd, I don't know what your favourite game is.
Super Mario World.
Oh, that's probably mine as well.
I think we're showing our age though there, mate.
Yeah, that makes us slightly pedestrian as well. We can't even get our shit together to have an individual game.
You don't need an individual game when you involve Super Mario World. That is the pinnacle of gaming from our generation, definitely.
I think so, mate. Do you have a 3DS?
Not yet.
Are you interested in Super Mario 3D Land, as it may be called somewhat uncreatively?
That's out Friday, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
That would be Friday the 18th.
Oh, you shitbag. At your local HMV?
Yeah, it is.
Any special offers on that game?
Do you know what? No, I can't believe you've done this already.
Mate, you set yourself up for it.
I'm not mentioning any of this, but...
Her Majesty's Virgins? I mean, it's a thing.
I don't want to mention any of that at all, but since you've brought it up, yeah, it is out tomorrow. It's available at HMVs.
You would make really a terrible fun. Alcoholic, do you know that? You'd be falling off the wagon at the first sign of a fucking bottle.
Well, see, this is the problem. You've started me off. It's only $34.99, apparently. And there's a few deal of the weeks as well. Need for Speed, The Run. It's only
$37. Oh, fuck you! Shut the fuck up! Get the fuck out of here! Correct talk.
What do you want to talk about today? What games have we got?
I want to hear about your little adventure. In relation to the technical aspects of this podcast today.
Okay, well, firstly, I'd like to apologise to all my fans out there if my mic's a little low. I had to use a replacement one because getting my own just went a bit pear-shaped before I came on.
In what way, exactly?
Kind of involved a car, a missing wallet, and a 10-minute journey down the road.
And Tesco,
yeah.
I think all of those things are the making of quite an epic story, to be completely honest. And then you flipped her over and she started first time. It ended something like that, should it not?
Probably a bit better than that. But
oh, mate.
That's for another podcast.
I've been a little bit depressed of late, actually. I had a little bit of an incident whereby I didn't get Skyrim.
Ooh.
Until significantly later than everyone else got it. You know, I went into a little bit of detail on the last podcast, but I've got it now, and I should be playing it right now, actually, but I'm stuck here with a couple of good people. Good people. Good.
Yeah, nice choice of words. Huh?
Yeah.
Cheers, mate.
I wouldn't be anywhere else.
Did anyone heckle you about not having the game?
You did, quite a lot. And because you did, other people started doing it as well.
Well deserved, though, really, if you don't have it.
No. I know, I meant to get it sent to the Amazon lockers, but I fucked it up, and then it went to a post office, and then I don't do mornings, so I couldn't go there in the morning, and fuck,
it's done. Like my car story.
Yeah. About as exciting as tickling a fucking statue's bollocks, to be honest. Although I imagine some people probably kind of find that like quite exciting. Are you guys familiar with Rule 34?
No.
Karim?
What list are we talking from? There's quite a few lists.
Mate, I have a number of lists.
It's the English, surely.
Rule 34, according to, let's say an urban dictionary, suggests that if something can be conceived of, then there is some sort of porn relating to it, and there will be a person who finds it sexually arousing.
Oh, well, there are Japanese in the world, so...
Yeah, for sure, man.
How is that on number 34 on the list? What's the other 33?
I would not even venture a guess, mate. If Rule 34 is that anything that can be fucking conceived by the human mind is pornography to someone, I don't want to know what the first 33 rules are, to be honest. I don't think I'm actually ready for that yet. Maybe in due course, if I, you know, if I turn into like a fucking Zen master or something, but
maybe that's it. Once you know the other 33 rules, you're like the Dalai Lama. You know what I mean?
You've ascended.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you're reaching nirvana.
Shit, man. You become like, I'm like Gandhi and all his whores. No, hang on. I'm thinking of the wrong person, aren't I?
That's Hugh Hefner. Close enough.
Yeah. And they've both got G's in them, so fuck it. Let's do that. What have we been playing, team?
Well, I've been playing, I've pretty much bought every day one game that's come out recently for the Xbox.
Someone's a little bit flush with money.
Well, I was.
But, yeah,
and then you bought a car.
Yeah, exactly. So it's been a tough month on my bank balance. But
I love first world problems. I'm almost out of money to buy video games. Like, fuck.
Well, let's see. I've got a little collection going now. So I've got Skyrim, Assassin's Creed, Battlefield, got the new FIFA, and got Dead Island before all those as well. So.
Okay. I want to start with a game that's not even one of those. So thank you for the segue. That's fucking awesome.
Straight into the main part of it.
Yeah, straight into the meat, man. We've missed it. I've missed it. It's been missed. Someone's missed it. Batman Arkham City.
What gives you the right? What's the difference between you and me?
I'm not wearing hockey pants.
Ooh.
Now, Karim, I believe you haven't played this.
No, I played the first one, but yeah.
So at this point in time, it's incumbent upon Rise Dread to furnish us with fucking extravagant detail about Rocksteady's latest joint.
First of all, that's sacrilege, not having Arkham City. This ought to be one of the best out this year, without a shadow of a doubt.
So I guess there's a couple of things about this. There were some bits and pieces running up to it. Now, for the longest time, Dredd, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but people seem to think this game was being dropped too early, and maybe the actual development cycle should have been longer.
I mean, I can understand the thought of it, as when you play it, or I have to say there might be a bit of a spoiler warning here, because I might talk about some things towards the end of it. The one main thing I found about Batman was it seems very cramped. There are a heavy, extensive number of DC villains that are in it, and a few that you don't see until quite close to the end anyway. Mm-hmm. But it seems like they tried to put in far too many characters for the amount of time that you play the game. It's like you're going through bit by bit by bit, and then it's like a new bad guy, new bad guy, new bad guy. Just you get flustered with them straight away.
Yeah. But does it seem that the individual enemies or villains that you're encountering like aren't being fleshed out, or is it literally it's just too many of them placed too close together?
No, it's just that. You don't really get to interact with them as much as you'd probably like. Yeah. I mean, like Harvey Dent, Two-Face. There's the whole initial opening scene, which everyone's seen with Catwoman, and then that's pretty much it. He's only really involved in Catwoman's story.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from that, who else is there? That I think just there's mention of the Scarecrow in it as well, but you don't see anything of him. There's a few little Easter eggs about him. One of them's a Riddler trophy, and one of them is. Have you played much of it? Something away.
No, I haven't played it at all, mate. I've missed it completely so far.
This doesn't really ruin anything for you, but there's a little barge in the dock, and it's got a hidden password panel which you can use your decoder to open. It's the hardest lot in the game, and it's a boat And then once you use the password panel, the bottom of the boat opens up, and it's to do with the scarecrow. It's like a little story spin to it there.
Okay.
So you kind of find out after the last game that he's not dead. He's still about, but you just don't know where. And he doesn't really show up in it, which would have been good.
Yeah, people don't die, really, in video games or comics. Although he wasn't in the films too much, but, you know, Cillian Murphy is one of my favourite characters in the new revitalised Nolan franchise, actually. He just comes out with some beautiful, beautiful lines.
Yeah, like, he was briefly in the second one as well, and hopefully they'll bring him back for a more fuller piece in the third, but...
I love that line of dialogue he's got in the second one. He said,
"Buyer beware. I told you my compound would take you places. I never said they'd be places you wanted to go."
I find that fucking beautiful. So there's a lot of villains in there.
There's a lot, yeah. Do you know what? I really shouldn't load up the game and list them all, but I mean, when you do the Riddler trophy stuff and you unlock all the bios about them, you just... Mm. For all of them, I mean, there's like the Mad Hatters in there as well, who's a brief thing in there. There's a Zaz, obviously, from the first one. Two-Face, Joker, obviously. Who else is there? Killer Croc makes an appearance in this one as well. Mm-hmm. It's just everyone they had from the last game, a few extras they didn't. And it's just, I mean, the Penguin's probably one of the better ones for the new people that are in this one, definitely. And I love the whole kind of... The alternative of he doesn't wear a monocle, he's got that bottle rammed into his eye now, which is...
Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's definitely a nice touch. Especially
is Bane in it at all?
Bane's in it, yeah.
Okay.
He's a separate storyline. You don't really fight him.
Mm.
You'll see.
What about good guys? Have they got like a cast of good guys?
No, not really. I mean, obviously, Batman chatting to Alfred every now and then helps you out. I'm trying to think who else now. Robin, and obviously there's the downloadable pack for him as Nightwing. Catwoman is one of the good guys as well. And then obviously you get in contact with Oracle as well, who is it Chief Gordon's daughter?
That's right.
Yeah. Okay.
So just to ask, the Robin, because in the comics, the number one Robin used to be a guy called Tim Drake, who was younger than... He was kind of the next one after Dick Grayson. So is that Robin based on Dick Grayson, or is it Tim Drake?
So the worst thing is, I've not actually downloaded content for Robin, so I haven't played as him.
I'm not sure that's the worst thing, to be completely honest, mate. It's a bit of a...
Yes, yeah,
it's a bit of a dodgy one. I'm just going to have a quick look at Wikipedia. I will say I did look at the Nightwing combat challenge videos, and it looked pretty fucking sweet, man.
Yeah, that's the one thing that I've never really enjoyed that much about those games. Even though it is the meat of the game, I enjoy the story more than anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So things like, I mean, in the first one, I did do all the combat challenges and all the stalker challenges. And I prefer the stalker challenges to the combat challenges.
Yeah.
But that's the one thing I haven't really done on this one is any of the combat challenges, because I can't be bothered.
Fair enough.
Yeah, after playing the game through twice and so on, it kind of got to the point where I was wanting to play something else. I think that was when... Was it Battlefield come out after that?
Well, you know, if it floats your boats. It's one of those things, and it's kind of like, this will be a trend for the conversations we're having, I think. It's like, games are built with, you know, with so many different layers now. You can't really get everything out of them unless you're incredibly committed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, the one game that's shown that the most recently is Gears of War.
Anya, it's a giant worm! They're sinking cities with a giant worm!
I mean, the Seriously 3.0 achievement, as we discussed, that's probably got to require some of the most commitment in any game going for centuries.
And I mean, obviously, even like Skyrim, you can play that game half a dozen different meaningful ways. Hundreds of hours, at least. So, tell me a little bit about... It's kind of... People go back and forth about whether it's a proper open world or not.
Oh, Batman.
Yeah.
Oh. Well, it's... The map is large enough, but it doesn't seem that large for the simple fact you can just glide about everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
That really does cut down the time it takes to travel from point to point. It's not immensely huge. I mean, it's not on the scale of things like Red Dead and... Grand Theft Auto 4, but it's big enough to do its job. definitely, because there's loads of interiors to explore and so on.
Oh,
and
mate, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia now. So Asriel is in this game.
He makes an appearance as well, but it's only as a mini side mission. He's basically there's a bit where you, in a story where you come out of a building and a puff of smoke appears and you walk up to him, you can talk to him, and he basically tells you how you're the chosen one for the coming war and some nonsense like that. And you have to find him in five different locations.
Sorry, go on, mate.
And then you just meet him up at the end, and then he tells you all the information about why they're seeking you out and how you're not ready yet.
I followed that comic for its 7-year run. It was like one of my favorite DC comics of all time, but then they kind of killed him off. Mm. You can, like, these Rocksteady guys, they're so proper deep into the lore. You can just see by all the characters and shit that they're including in there.
Yeah, like I said, they definitely are trying to up the number of separate storylines and so on, but I'm so excited you've not finished it yet, because there is something about the end.
No, I've not even started it, mate.
Oh, there's something about the end that I need to talk about, but I can't, obviously, yet, as it's such a spoiler-heavy thing.
Save it. We'll do it. I hear the end is pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely... You don't see it coming at all.
Yeah.
And when it happens, it's like, oh my god.
But nice. Yeah,
we will have to discuss that in great detail once you finish it.
Okay, we can do, like, you know, the Joystick Podcast. I think they do like a spoiled rotten section where they just chuck it all at the end, like, and they just tell you. So we'll do something like that. So it's kind of quasi open world with instance dungeons. Is that kind of how it breaks down?
Yeah, I mean, there are bits where you will go into a building and it will kind of instant. But, I mean, a lot of it is built as it is, especially when you're ascending Wonder Tower and so on. But, I mean, that obviously, once you start getting into the interior, then it is instances and so on. But it is the majority of what you see is what you get, I mean, apart from interior bits. But, yeah, it's not fun exploring that as Catwoman. That's the one thing. Whereas Batman glide about everywhere, Catwoman uses her whip to swing from pillar to post. Mm-hmm. And then even when it says where you're kind of swinging for, she doesn't land there. You land halfway up the building, and then you have to jump up every little bit.
Okay. All right. Well, interestingly, not everyone will be playing as Catwoman when they pick this game up. I guess from my perspective, this is the first core single player game which I've seen content ring-fenced off for, like, you know, with the bought new code.
Yeah.
Well, how did you feel about that? You bought it new, presumably.
Yeah, and then I bought the special edition, so I've got my little Batman statue sat on my desk as well. There was a DVD inside there, plus some extra downloadable content, an absolutely horrible costume which I've never used for Batman.
Yeah.
It's like fat Batman with a massive square jaw, which is like no point playing as him.
That's the Frank Miller one, isn't it? The Dark Knight.
Like, it's rubbish Batman. It's nowhere near as good as the original one.
Yeah.
The worst thing was, is I bought the Green Lantern on Blu-ray as well, expecting to be able to use the DLC that comes with that. It's another costume. It's it's like Batman in a Green Lantern costume, but it's orange rather than green. And it's only for the PS3, so that was a hit in the nuts as well.
Yeah, it's nice to know. There are quite a lot of costumes on this one, aren't there, for different pre-orders, like different retailers and stuff.
Yeah, they had all the GameStop ones in America and so on as well. But they are bringing them out as a one big bundle package. I believe it's the end of this month.
Okay. And it will be only, 2,000 Microsoft points probably? Something along those lines?
It's 2,800 Microsoft points.
And
you need to send them one of your testicles.
Yeah, well, you know, the left one's not working for me so well, so I think I'll send them.
Yeah, your spare one then, basically. Yeah,
for sure, man. I'll give them that problem. Fuck it, they can take the antibiotics. So, is that right or wrong, what they've done?
I don't know. See, I've always bought new for the majority of games I play. I mean, I think it's one of those, if you're really into it and you really want to support the studio, then buy new.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is, with the whole download codes or online passes and so on and so forth, the one thing that got me was it you that said it last time, that someone was giving away hundreds of codes to put in their pre-owned ones over in the US?
They're doing that now. They're selling the pre-owned codes to GameStop to put in their pre-owned games, which I don't know. It's money of a sort, but I think it's going at it the wrong way. That's a much bigger problem to me than ring fencing sections of a single player game for bought new codes. But I still think that's a little bit suspect as well, a little bit shady.
To be honest, when I played it, I thought Batman probably would have been better off without some of the Catwoman sections. Although it does fill in the story,
yeah,
of how she gets involved and so on. She's useless compared to Batman. Really is.
And there's Catwoman only Riddler trophies, isn't there?
Yeah, and little pink trophies as well.
Girls just like pink, apparently.
Yeah, exactly. Because I mean, boys get the green one. That's Riddler's original colour, and then. Yeah, little pink ones for the ladies, but yeah, there's not that many. I think there's only 40. I mean, in total, there's 440 Riddler trophies if you've got the Catwoman DLC.
Fucking hell, man. There's too much in this game, isn't there?
Do you know what? You would think so. And the Riddler trophies, if you try and do them all in one hit, it does feel like it is.
Yeah.
But that is, unfortunately, the best route to take is to just do the story, do the side missions, and then do the Riddler trophies.
Because you won't necessarily have all the powers or functionality you need, will you, to get all the Riddler trophies?
Exactly. That's the thing. You do need pretty much everything towards the end to get them all.
Because
they require certain gadgets or certain things you pick up in the story later on to acquire them.
So overall, what, like Game of the Year material, what do you think?
I'd say it would have been a solid contender, but with some of the stuff that's come out recently, it's hard to put it up against what's already been out. I mean, I still think Portal is one of my favourite this year so far.
That came out in January, didn't it?
That was really early this year.
Yeah, proper dead early.
That's definitely been one of the better things that have been out. Batman, I don't know if I'd place that in my top three, though.
That says something about the quality of the games this year, probably.
Yeah, it's not the fact that Batman's shocking. Mm-hmm. It's the fact that there's been some absolutely brilliant titles, even though they are more and more spin-offs, as always, as with Assassin's Creed, Battlefield, Call of Duty, and so on. Yeah, I mean, it's all the freeze, the year of the freeze, apparently.
Yeah.
So it's not the fact that it's just a bad game; it's a brilliant game. It's just up against such heavyweight titles.
It does make you wonder, actually, what these developers are going to do before the next generation of consoles hits, doesn't it?
Well, that's the thing. Where do you go from here?
Because they're kind of wrapping a lot of this stuff up. You know, a trilogy, the way it's, a general narrative structure set out is it's three parts. And if you do that with the games, Gears of War, for example, or you can do something like Assassin's Creed. And from what I understand, the latest Assassin's Creed is kind of a water tread.
Yeah, it's meant to be the end of the Ezio Auditore story.
Mm-hmm.
But from what I've heard, it just leaves you with more questions than answers. Mm-hmm. Because even though it is the end of Ezio, it's not the end of Desmond as such. And that's one I've just started playing, actually. Was that come out on Tuesday?
Okay, so I think both you and Karim have played that. And once again, this is something that I haven't played. So just, you've played, I played all the other Battlefield games, all the Assassin's Creed games. I quite like them, actually. How does this one stack up?
I'd say that it's pretty much the same as Brotherhood, to be honest. Mm-hmm. They've sort of done with the last, since number two, or even from the start of the construction of the series, like they get the concepts and they just twist it every game, like into a different concept, but they still use like the same like game design and technical aspects. So it's sort of like in Brotherhood, you've got like the Borgia Towers that you burn down.
I love doing that, actually. I had a lot of fun doing that.
I mean, it's fun, but it's just, once you've played one Assassin's Creed, you go to the next game and you've got to do the same, but just slightly different. Like in Revelations, they've taken that and then they've just reapplied it, but just for a different faction, and said like, yeah, just burn down these towers so the Templars get scared away from that area.
But I hear they can take the towers back now. Is that right?
I think so. I haven't got that far into it. They've introduced like other little games, like tower games sort of thing, and you're a commander on like a rooftop as Ezio, and you hire or put your squad on the rooftops to basically defend a set position.
So just like a tower defense thing.
Yeah, which is interesting, but I've only played one of them so far, so I'm not sure how effective they are or how fun they are later on in the game. So I think I've seen everything from that little mini game to what they could do with it.
I think they've probably got some quite significant plans to spin a lot of this stuff off onto like Facebook and other, you know, mobile platforms and social networks and stuff like that. What do you think?
Yeah, they've got quite a few out already, like games for the web and for the PSP and for mobile phones. And they all tie into like Desmond and Altair primarily. Not so much Ezio, because he's more of a, just on the console really. He's not really branched out onto the handheld consoles. I think they're trying to get Altair back into the spotlight, as it were. And in the next game, I'm sure there'll be a big spoiler for Altair.
This was being marketed actually as something of a partnership, isn't it? But from what I understand, and keep in mind I haven't played the game, this is almost 90% Ezio and 10% Altair, which seems a little bit misleading.
Yeah, I mean, since I've started, I've only done like about two of the DNA sequences, or two or three, and it seems that you see Altair as like a ghost or a DNA sequence. And you sort of just follow him around town. And
as you do. You know,
yeah, he sort of jumps off a 300-foot building. And you sort of do the same. Like, where's Altair going? You know, that could have been the end of Altair, that jump.
Yeah, it sounds like a good Friday night to me, to be honest.
Well, I don't know. It's a good game, but it's just, I don't think it's really advanced much from Brotherhood.
But why do you think that is? See, my impression, Karim, is that what they're attempting to do is they've got the overarching story. They've got like the plot, and they're putting these games out with very, very small amounts of progression in terms of the plot that they're trying to tell. Because, you know, the overarching stuff is around Desmond, isn't it? Like, you know, and what he's going to do, how he's going to sort this situation out in the real world. But so the first one was about Altair, the second one was about Ezio, the third one was about Ezio, and now the fourth one is about Ezio as well?
Yeah, but the spin-offs are obviously going back to Altair and that is, as well, so...
The way they explain this, though, is like there's something that's gone wrong, and now, as you're inside the Animus, it seems to be melding all your memories together, or all your ancestries together, which I think is why they're trying to explain the fact that as you're Desmond seeing what happens with Ezio, you're seeing Altair as well, because that whole opening scene, like on the kind of training level of it almost, which is the one that the adverts run at the eye up in the tower, and they're about to hang Ezio, you're seeing Altair running through the place as well, but as the buildings used to look, because there's bits where he's climbing up and it's crumbled now, it's almost ruins, but he's going through it as it was originally. And it's all like from the opening town as well, the original kind of Assassin's Haven from the first game. That's kind of how you see it.
Yeah. It's starting to sound like some strange psychological incest to me, to be honest. If they all meld together, are you telling me this game finishes with Supersonic? That would be fucking... awesome.
Well, the whole thing is you're in there, you're trapped inside the Animus, and it's the only thing that's stopping Desmond turn into a vegetable is kind of how they explain it. It's he has to try and piece together or find strands of his original ancestry, and the Animus rebuilds it from there to try and help rebuild his mind for whatever reason. I mean, and I've not played that much. I've literally played the opening level. I mean, that's my unfortunate confession. The only thing I've been playing on that game is the multiplayer.
Okay. I'll come in with two opinions, I guess. I mean, they're pushing out these games on a yearly basis, and I think probably one of the reasons that we continue to see Ezio year after year is because they've got all that geometry, you know, all those cities built out, and it's just simply easier and a lot more cost effective to recycle those assets and just use Ezio again. But the other opinion that I have is I've always believed that Assassin's Creed is very, very clever in the way that it markets the game, like video game conceits, as part of its, you know, natural narrative. So you can't go into that particular area of the city because you haven't got that memory yet. You know, it's like normally it would just be an invisible wall or some other gated mechanism, but they've actually found a way to weave the story in so that it kind of makes a logical sense in terms of what they're trying to tell you about how the game plays, which I've always found kind of clever, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it does work how they've blocked it off, because obviously there's bits that you can see and like you go, oh, that looks quite interesting, you know, like you think something's going to happen at that certain building and you'll see it from a distance, you'll be like, oh, I'll go over there and see what's over there, so to speak. And as you walk towards it, there's this wall that goes, yeah, not yet, mate, not yet. But
which lots of games do, but I just find it interesting that this game actually has a reason to give you that's consistent with the logic of the game about why you can't do that. I've always found that kind of clever.
Yeah, I think it is quite a good way of blocking off certain stages. And it also gives you like insight into some of the enemies you're going to come up against and stuff, and how difficult the city might get. Because you get like the Templar presence at first, and you know, they're just like soft infantry or whatever, and as you go through the town you start to see like more fortified places. You can see like the story is going to develop in a way where obviously Ezio is going against the city guard, as it were.
How does the combat feel in a post Batman world?
It's the same, isn't it? It's that's the thing, like you say, with Assassin's Creed, it's almost got the FIFA Call of Duty effect on at the moment. With the engines, they're not much of an upgrade than what's come before it. I mean, the one thing I have noticed is the graphics. They do seem to have improved that a fair amount from what I'm used to from the previous ones. But apart from that, combat's the same. I've not really noticed much different.
Okay.
Yeah, I think what they've done from the first one to the current game is they've just tried to speed up the combat in every single game. So it's sort of like in the first one, it was really slow to fight off a group. And then they started introducing like executioner moves, and you'd kill the first one in the group. And then if you move towards someone else and press a button, it's like an instantaneous kill. So sort of they're just developing on that concept in this game as well. So they've introduced like the hook blade, which is one of your primary weapons that you use, and that allows you to, you know, just flip over people and then kill them from behind rather than break down their defense or wait for a counter attack. So the combat's still the same, but they're just trying to speed it up as to be as action packed as possible. It's sort of working, but I wouldn't say they're at the place they could be with Assassin's Creed.
So that hook blade thing, can you use it to climb buildings as well?
Yeah, like they've put in so you can climb buildings and do like extra long jumps, and like when you there's like these lanterns on the corner of some buildings and stuff, and they've been in the old game, so you just swing around to the other side of the building.
Yeah
They put them in, and then with the hook blade you can swing further, so it sort of opens it up a bit, because in the last game I found like as you're running across the rooftops, like you'll run across like, you know, five roofs and you'll still be getting chased, and then you'll run towards another rooftop and then it's just too big of a jump, and then you just fall into the street. You either break your legs or, you know, you just have to run like through the streets, and it's sort of unrealistic because you wouldn't drop from that high, sort of thing, just carry on. So they're trying to make it more fluid, like I don't know, Mirror's Edge, I suppose.
I think running through the streets with a couple of broken legs probably is a tad unrealistic.
Yeah, just slightly.
Just a touch.
Well, even in the opening cutscene, they've got like Ezio falling quite high up, and he just lands, like he crouches as he lands, and he just runs off, like as he falls.
He can't be that young anymore, is he?
No, he's aged quite a lot in this game. And it looks a bit weird because he looks about 60 or something.
Oh my god, and he's still running around on the rooftops.
Yeah.
Well, he does reference that as well in that opening level, as when you when you get to the first kind of mini outpost almost, and you have to get to the top of the roof, he uses like a giant water wheel.
Yeah.
He even says as he gets up to the top, he's like, oh, it's not as easy as it used to be.
Yeah.
So they do reference the fact that he is older now.
Yeah.
But he is a lot older now than what he was from from Brotherhood and 2.
So is this the last we've seen of Ezio then?
Not finished it yet, I didn't say to be sure.
Okay.
I'd say he's back in the next one, but not as a main character. I think they'll all, you know, be in the last game.
Mm. I suppose one of the benefits of using something which, for all intents and purposes, is time travel, you know, of a sort, is you can probably pull them out of any DNA sequence, can't you, at any age? So, you know, never say never, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
They've really planned it out on how they can touch on everything almost.
Yeah, it's pretty clever, actually. Do we feel... I'm starting to feel, keep in mind, once again, that I haven't played the game, but we might be getting to the point of diminishing returns with Assassin's Creed in its current format.
Yeah, I think one more game and they need to call it a day, to be honest. They're not improving as much as they should have done, per game. And using, you know, the same characters over and over. I guess for some series it works, but when you had Altair and then the second game you moved to another character, you sort of set yourself up for limiting, like, their lifetime.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. Like, obviously Desmond's there, but as I haven't played that much of the game, I'm not sure how much of an assassin he becomes in the present, as it were.
Well, that's the thing as well. I think with the titles they've called these sequels, they've not named any of them Assassin's Creed 3 yet because they haven't really done an engine update. So I think that's what they're saving it for, because this is a continuation of the story from what is number 2. That's why they've not bothered really. So, I mean, I really hope they do continue the series, because I don't know if you two have played much of the multiplayer, but I think it's one of the most... I'd say it's probably one of the most revolutionary multiplayers I've played since Team Fortress, the original one.
I've spent some time with it, actually. I'm in agreement. It's very different. It takes a little while to get your head round, but there's not anything like it out there. So have they done... I played a lot of Brotherhood multiplayer. Have they done anything significantly different, or is this just like an iteration on those concepts?
If anything, I'd say... I mean, it is it's an alteration from what's already been done, but I think they've tried to make it easier, in a sense, for people who are first-time playing it, because they've got a scaled-down version of the original free-for-all, which is now you're in a much smaller playing field. You're maybe a quarter of a normal-sized map from Brotherhood.
Okay.
And you don't have, you know, the circle at the bottom, that kind of guidance arrow that tells you where someone is?
Yeah.
You don't have that at all. All you have is their portrait. But the thing is, there's not other people on the map that look like them.
Yeah.
You don't need them.
Okay.
So everyone else looks like a standard civilian. So you can kind of tell who are the players and who aren't if you're E9, you know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
And that can be, at first, that was the first thing I jumped into, it was kind of like, well, what the hell's going on? How come everyone can pick me out so easily when I'm trying to move around in the crowd? And then I thought, oh, as I started to play it, I locked on more and more. But they've got some weird game modes on there. The other one I played, there's one now where you have to select your target before you assassinate them. So it's not to the point where you have the arrow that shows you where they are. You have an arrow that shows you where everyone is on the map. Then you have to head towards them, then select them as your target before you kill them.
Okay.
So you can make the mistake of selecting a civilian as your target if you want to.
It's always hilarious. You just see those stabbing chains. It's like the Hokey Pokey, isn't it? Just, you know, the first one gives it away that they're not an NPC, and then they stab a civilian, someone stabs them, someone stabs them. It's really interesting, actually. I do like it. Did you play any of the multiplayer, Karim? Yep.
I haven't played it yet, but I am looking forward to it, actually. I do want to get into it, because I tried with Brotherhood, and I played on like one of the first days, so I did find it quite fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I did find it a bit hard to get into. So if they simplified it and made it a bit more of a hide-and-seek, as it were, like, so you don't have a radar to tell you how close you are to someone, like, maybe I'll have, you know, a bit of a better chance to...
Well, the problem with this one at the moment now as well is it seems to have been out, or people have had it for a while already. So there's already level 50s running around on the multiplayer who have unlocked everything. So it's almost a borderline unfair advantage, as they would say.
Yeah.
As they have all the decent perks and abilities and so on.
Are you able to block them off, though? Like, you know, do it by level? Or...
The first time I went into it and I just went search for a quick game, no. There was about three of them in there. But I have to say, when I was playing yesterday evening, a lot of the people were around the same level as me. So it seems to have been balancing out when there was more people online, as I was playing on that first night about 3 a.m.
Okay.
This is a fundamental problem with multiplayer, and I've spent a while thinking about it, but I really can't see any way around it. It seems incredible that the people who spend more time playing the game are more able to kill the people who are newer to the game. Like, there's no solution, is there? What do you do? Reverse it? Do you have it so that the people who, you know, your level ones have all the equipment, and then Metroid style, the more you progress, that, you know, the more you start to lose, or the you know, the less effective your weapons become?
Well, the one thing with Assassin's Creed is, I mean, I would say I was quite proficient at Brotherhood, like literally like oh matches without ever dying. But I still found that you can transition your ability, like your own personal ability playing that game, into the new one. And though the abilities and perks and so on can help, they're not a massive advantage. I mean, the one thing I do miss the most is things like the smoke bomb, because I'd always use that as soon as I knew someone was onto me, and it'd be an easy stun. But stunning now is different as well, because when you know someone's coming towards you, even though you might not stun them and knock them out, you can still do what they call like a contested heal.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas they go to attack you, you punch them in the face, but they still heal you. They only earn about 150 points for that, but you earn 100 points as well.
Nice.
So it's they've tried to... They it's really
like
have
the
tried
QTE
to...
sort of thing.
No. What it is if you notice that someone's coming towards you and you have no real way of escaping, I mean, if you press B, that's kind of like an indication that you've spotted that they're coming to heal you, and you're going to attack them first almost.
Okay.
But you can't heal your assassin, obviously. You can only stun them. But if they try to assassinate you at the same time, then you basically share the points almost, is how it works out.
Okay.
It's a bit of an odd one in that sense. But
I'm still reeling a little bit from just the concept that someone, for all intents and purposes, has made a multiplayer game out of a fucking Turing test. Like, is it real or is it not? Like, it's kind of crazy. It's disappointing that you haven't seen more stuff like this come out in other games, because normally when someone hits on something impressive, it gets cloned and, you know, and ripped off consistently. You know, like Modern Warfare. But I guess this is such a strange concept to deal with, that other people perhaps don't feel comfortable with it.
It's almost a new concept. It's like, you gotta think, like when the Kinect came out, every game that came out on that was pretty much the same thing, you know, waggle about and so on, like the Wii. But it's once people start to get to grips with it, then maybe you can see some of the clones start to appear, which improve and improvise on what's already been before it.
It's almost a new genre in some ways, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's the first kind of thing that, because I mean, if you look like the Uncharted multiplayer, they took the kind of Tomb Raider blueprint and then they made a multiplayer into that, but the multiplayer was still just a third person shoot 'em up, pretty much, from what I played of it anyway. So it's almost like, I don't know, it seems like there is a real lack of innovation going on at the moment.
Ken Levine, if anyone can, will probably do something with this concept for BioShock Infinite Multiplayer. I would love to see something along those lines from those guys. I think it'll be really interesting.
Did you play the last BioShock multiplayer?
I did.
How did you find that?
It was like a XBLA download, to be honest. I mean, that wasn't an Irrational Games game, though, was it? Irrational Studios game. That was a thing.
I'm trying to think who did the second one, actually.
It was like an offshoot. It was, I think at the time they were called like Irrational East and Irrational West or something like that.
Mm.
And it was just an offshoot. Ken Levine was approached about making BioShock 2, and he said, I need this amount of time and this amount of money. And they said, no, you can't have that. And he said, well, you know, that's fine, I'm not making the game then. So they gave it to someone else. It was a bit of a disappointment to me all round, but I'm sure BioShock Infinite is going to be completely revolutionary.
Have they released any more footage on it? Or?
No, not of late. They released that sort of 10-15 minute demo maybe 4 months ago or so, and kind of really wowed everyone who saw it. I think I sent you a link to that, Karim.
Yeah, I remember.
What they've been doing now is they're putting out... Recently, they've been putting out quite a lot of videos of the motion capture and the audio capture, like the vocal dialogue capture of the two main protagonists, and they're having them talk about the characters. And I always find that a little bit curious as well, like hearing the voice actors talk about the characters as if they're the actors representing the characters. And I guess in some ways they are, in a lot of ways they are. You might say in all of the ways they are, but I still find that a bit strange. It always feels to me like they're being coached about what to say about the characters. But I don't know, maybe that's me just misreading it.
I don't know. Maybe, like, I don't know, it's a bit of a complicated one with them. Like, they could say anything to you, really. But
yeah, and you wouldn't know, would you? Because it's just the voice at the end of the day. I think Andy Serkis is going to come around to my house and kick the shit out of me as soon as he hears his podcast. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about on Assassin's Creed?
Play the multiplayer.
So it's a Ubisoft game. I'm just looking at it on Amazon. Does it come with... Is the multiplayer caged?
Yes, unfortunately. It is locked away with your pass. But once you use the Uplay passport, you do get a online character called the Sentinel. Wanted mode and artifact assault mode, apparently.
But it does mean that I can't rent it from Love Film. Or it means that if I rent it from Love Film, I need to pay how many points? 800 points? 1200 points?
Yeah, it's the standards, normally 800.
Okay, I'll give that some consideration.
I mean, I only bought it just for the multiplayer. That's the main reason why I bought that game.
That's a really bizarre position to be in, though, dude, is buying an Assassin's Creed game for the multiplayer.
Yeah, but that's the thing, is that's how good I think that game is, like, online. I think it's, like, I'd pick that over playing Call of Duty at the moment.
Okay. Well, that seems reasonable. I want to hear your guys' impressions once you spend some more time with the single player, actually. I'm sold on the multiplayer, but I want to know how this story progresses, if it does at all.
Yeah, that will be in a week or so. I think I'll be finished with that single player, to be honest.
Depending on how busy you are at work.
Yeah, well, definitely. But it doesn't feel like the game is going to be that long. They have changed the textures and stuff like that. But I think, for the most part, I think it's quite linear. And I've already got a few predictions of what will happen throughout the story. But
you can put them down on tape here, mate, for your edification or your shame, should you want to.
Well, that's the thing, isn't it? I'm not ready to risk it yet. So,
mate, you need to embrace the taking of risks.
Well,
it will make your life richer.
Everything is permitted, mate.
Here we go. Fucking random texts and emails I get from this guy about Assassin's Creed before I'd played it as well.
Requiescat in pace, mate.
I like that. I say that to my staff at work. I don't think they get it. I hope not, anyway. So, what else have you guys been playing?
A bit of Battlefield 3, mate.
Okay.
Who hasn't played Battlefield? Yeah.
We've got some invitees for next week. So I think if you guys don't mind, we'll leave the Battlefield talk for next week. Is that okay?
That's fine.
I've got quite a big group of people, including Ryan Whitelaw, which will be quite amusing because he's a crazy drunken. So
just don't say that to his face. Is he
that's getting bleeped. You do realise that, don't you? That's getting bleeped with one of your burps.
All right. Good.
Yeah.
He's a crazy.
Yeah, he's a lovely, lovely man. And I wish all the best on him and the spawn of his loins. No, spawn's not the right word. The fruit of his loins.
No, it probably would be
as well.
Yeah. Well, can I share something I've been playing with you guys then? And it's not new, so you'll have to forgive me. But Karim, about a year ago, lent me the game Singularity.
All right. Yeah.
Which is an Activision published, Raven Software developed single player FPS. Dredd, have you played it?
Yes, I own Tinker Larry.
Have you beaten it?
No, I haven't. I am quite bored of it.
Okay. Karim, what did you think of it?
I didn't think it was that bad, actually.
Mm.
It's obviously not up to the same level as Bioshock, but I think for a lower level budget, I thought it did pretty well. I could be wrong there, saying it's a lower level budget, but that's what I presume it is.
Well, I guess Raven Software, you know, they're probably a tier B developer. Hexen, what else did they put out, Dreads? A lot of PC FPSs back in the day, didn't they?
Oh, mate, how can you even say Raven a tier B? They brought out the almighty Soldier of Fortune 2.
Oh, mate, tier D, Raven Software.
How dare you?
I dare, mate, with great panache.
Did you ever play Soldier of Fortune 2?
I didn't. I to be completely honest, I was put off by the old Daily Mail fucking backlash on that.
No, Soldier of Fortune 2 online was probably...
Yeah, that was amazing back in the day.
I used to play that game religiously, like especially on a LAN base back in the day when that was the big thing for that. And yeah, used to play on the ladders on there all the time. Represented Team UK in Soldier of Fortune 2. I used to love that.
I guess they are, you know, just talking about Raven in question, they are they're probably well known for their, you know, netcode, aren't they? Because didn't they put together Modern Warfare 3, the multiplayer stuff to a certain extent?
DLC and user interface apparently. Okay. they did work on a lot of the back in the days, all the Quake engine stuff. Just trying to see what their Soldier of Fortune 2, they're big ones really. Quake 4, they worked on that as well. Wolfenstein 2009.
Yeah, there was that Hexen, and there was other one like Hexen as well.
Yeah.
So what I think happened here is Activision, and maybe Dredd, you can tell me if this timeline is correct, if you're fact-checking. Activision saw Dead Space drop by EA, and Dead Space, for all intents and purposes, was an amalgamation of certain other prominent games and mechanics from those games put into one thing. And it was very, very successful. You know, it didn't have an amazing amount of originality, but the way that it was completely solid and competent in all of the things that it did, you know, in addition to the atmosphere that it had, meant I think it fucking sold bucket loads. And I think Activision took a look at that and then wanted to do something similar, because what you notice as soon as you start playing Singularity is that mechanically it plays like Modern Warfare. It plays like a Call of Duty game. You've got your B button on crouch, you've got your left trigger to scope in. It's run and gun to a certain extent, and it, you know, it will remind you of a Modern Warfare. They have also tried to incorporate environmental and kind of atmospheric stuff from Bioshock, so they've lifted directly the audio tapes and things like that, and you know, there's lots of references on the walls and things of that nature to what's going on in the environment. And I think they've tried to tie it all together with a kind of Half-Life 2 narrative kind of structure, really, because you do have people following you around and all this kind of stuff. And I really struggled through the first couple of hours of the game, but once all the weapons started opening up and you start getting the time device working properly, it all really starts to come together, actually. So it's just an FPS, a science fiction FPS. But on your hand, you have a TMD, which is a time manipulation device. And you can use that to either age or de-age enemies, certain enemies, and certain pieces of the environment. So they start to use that in, like, minor puzzles. So, you know, if you de-age a certain type of block, it becomes a lot smaller, and then you can fit it for a certain space and climb on top of something. Or there are lots of kind of gates which are like half a meter or a third of a meter off the ground. Then you make a box smaller, put it under the gate, and re-age it to make it bigger, and then you can fit through. And it's kind of like lots of simplistic puzzles like that. And you can stop the enemies in midair and like make them go super slow-mo, and then shoot them. And there's quite a few interesting achievements. But by the end of the game, it was actually quite useful. I really enjoyed it. I'd say that was maybe a high 3 out of 5 for me, I think. What did you think, Karim?
Yeah, I'd say 3's probably where it's at, out of 5.
Mm-hmm.
Because I bought it secondhand, and as a secondhand game, I think I bought it for a tenner. I think it was
£8.98. I'm looking at the case.
All right. Yeah, I think it was well worth the money for that sort of price.
It was priced by someone who was fucking dyslexic, obviously.
$8.98, that's brilliant. That's...
Yeah, $8.98.
Well, I think, I'm not sure how much I would have paid for it if it was brand new, to be honest. And that's my issue with those sort of games. I mean, obviously, we've been talking about, you know, all the AAA games recently, and it's sort of, you know, that's in the past. Like, I wouldn't buy any games less than a AAA at the moment, because I don't think they're up to scratch. And I guess that's why I would value that as a 3 out of 5 as well, because at the time when it came out, I'd say there were probably better games that you could have bought for a bit more of your dollar.
So I guess the conversation I really wanted to have, now that I've given you my impression of the game, is, are we in a position now where single player FPSs are irrelevant?
No, I enjoy single player FPSs. I don't have that many, but I do enjoy them when they come about.
They have to be done right, though, don't they? I think that's the thing. Is, I mean, if you think of the last truly great single player FPS, I mean, half the people I can think of are either on, say, Portal 2 or Half-Life 2. They're the two that were really, I mean, even I mean Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, I sat there and played through that on Veteran, and it took me about 5 hours, and it was like, well, that was worth it. So I mean, $44.99 for that, and then it's just a multiplayer, really, which is I think that rests on the fact that there's such a large community that plays it, which is why it's so good. And it's built on top of what was probably one of the best first person shooter engines ever made in the original Call of Duty 4.
Mm-hmm. But let's be frank here. I mean, the Call of Duty games are multiplayer games with single player tacked on. I mean, I don't think there's anyone that I know who's buying a Call of Duty game for the single player. And, you know, I think the same is true of the last couple of Battlefields as well.
See, this is where I differ, because as with Assassin's Creed, I mean, I did buy Call of Duty. I've always, the first thing I'll do before I do anything online is I'll finish the single player just to know what the story is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing, is this one seems like it's all over the shop. The one thing that I mean, I've penned this as my phrase to describe the single player Modern Warfare 3. It's a Michael Bay wank fest, literally. It's just explosions for the sake of explosions all the way through it, pretty much.
Yeah.
Have you played the single player?
No, I just finished playing the single player for COD Blocks recently, and I confess the only reason I did play that is because I was going to trade the game in and I wanted the achievements. It wasn't even that many achievements, to be honest. But there's also something about me personally as a gamer, and I don't know if you guys share this, but I'm a bit of a completionist, and it actually bothered me that I hadn't played the single player for that game, although I'd put 100 plus hours into the COD Blocks multiplayer before I was willing to get rid of that game, to let go of that game, just for posterity's sake. I had to do the single player, and the single player was fucking nonsense.
Yeah, wait till you play the Modern Warfare 3 single player. I mean, obviously you've done Call of Duty 4.
Yeah, which Call of Duty 4 I liked. I remember really liking the single player.
That's probably the most memorable single player out of the series so far as well. I mean, literally, when I think back to Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops, and Modern Warfare 3, the stories just meld ever, and it mixed up which one was from which, because they weren't that memorable. They were just action sequence after action sequence after action sequence.
Yeah.
But whereas Call of Duty 4, that whole opening scene, when the boat first kind of lost its side, after you find a nuke, and it tilts, and it was like, this is probably one of the most amazing things I've ever seen in the first-person shooter, even though it was simply a case of just rotating a boat, do you know what I mean, 45 degrees in water.
Yeah, I know, it was amazing. And then, did you make the jump the first time off the back of that boat?
Oh yeah, of course.
Oh, you bastard. Nobody ever makes the first jump. That's from The Matrix, isn't it? Karim.
What would you guys say about Medal of Honor then? Because they used to be renowned for their single player before.
I never played them.
No, I've never played a Medal of Honor either.
Any of them, apart from the. I only bought the last one on the current gen, just because the multiplayer was made by DICE. That's the only reason I bought it.
And that was a Call of Duty clone as well, wasn't it? That particular multiplayer.
Which was so disappointing.
Mm.
Okay, just move on.
That's enough of that.
All right, so for the record, Singularity is not a single player only game, and I did go on the multiplayer servers just to see what was up, and there was people playing it, so I was quite surprised about that. I didn't play any games because I wasn't particularly interested in doing it, but there were people still playing it, so there is something of a little community around that. I did post a couple of messages on the Playfire website. I don't know if you guys are members of it.
Apparently someone's already made my profile for it, but I haven't done it yet.
Okay, yeah, did you get that message? I got a message from someone
yeah,
from
I think it was MF Nick who sent me that on my Xbox profile.
Yeah. It's kind of like Twitter, but with you've got friends there kind of already, you know, people who just comment about games. So I was talking about Singularity. I posted a couple of messages on Playfire and people were responding, so people are still playing it.
Is the multiplayer on that the one where it's humans versus kind of weird monsters? Like there's like a big thing and a little thing and another thing.
That sounds quite a lot like Dead Space 2, but I think that is true of Singularity as well.
Yeah, I have played it online actually. I did give that a bash as well. I do vaguely remember it. There's like a big centipede and a...
Yeah. Exactly. So for me at least, I mean, I think... Unless the words Ken and Levine are mentioned in the same sentence, I'm pretty much at this point done with single player first person shooters. It doesn't. I want points to pop off people when I've killed them. That's a thing for me now.
So did you play?
Just before we move on to obviously where this is going, would you say Dead Space is a single player shooter or?
It's not a first-person shooter. It's not a first-person shooter. Third-person shooters are kind of a different proposition in lots of ways. I've got some thoughts about this, but they're not terribly clear in my head. But I do think that there's something intrinsically different, not only from having a different perspective to view the game world, but actually at all times being able to see your game avatar. I think... psychologically that does something quite different to you. I mean, for example, when you were looking at your character in Oblivion from third person, you could tell something was horribly, horribly wrong. I don't know. I need to have a think about that. It's not terribly clear what I'm trying to get at, but
I know what you mean. Oblivion and Skyrim should not be played in third person at all. It removes you to a certain degree from the experience, I think. I mean, I still find Dead Space, the first one, was still one of the most atmospheric games, but it was nowhere near as kind of frightening as Fear was, the original Fear.
Yeah.
Like, Fear, definitely. I mean, that got me a few at times. I mean, the infamous bit in Fear is when you're going through what seems like a kind of industrial walkway, and then you climb down a ladder. As you climb down the ladder, there's the little Earl of Alma just staring at you. And that kind of gets you the first time. But as you get to the bottom of the ladder, you jump off, you turn around, and there's Fettel standing in front of you, just staring at you. And it's like that kind of thing of being in the first-person perspective kind of puts you more into it than it would in third-person.
Yeah. There's a very, very important distinction there. And like I said, I literally don't think it's just to do with a perspective. I think it's something a lot more profound than that. Now, Isaac Clarke from Dead Space, it was the way he moved which really engaged me with that character. Do you know what I mean? And it's the same thing with Nathan Drake. If you're going to do third person, I think you need to have a lot of animation on, you know, lots of different animation on the character as they move and like reacting to the environment, because basically that character, you know, that avatar is being sold on how they interact with the stuff around them. So, you know, if they're passing a wall and they brush their hand against it, or they're going through a narrow crevice and they sort of turn sideways, it sells it a hell of a lot more.
I don't know. I still think that third person FPS is like, because you said that they're not as scary, but then you've also got Resident Evil, and you know, it's done quite well over the years, and they've always been primarily third person. So
I don't know. Isn't Resident Evil game so scary though? Because the fucking controls are so shit.
They're just, I don't know. I mean, I have to say, like that whole thing in the second one and the first one, that was frightening when I was a kid. But when I play Resident Evil 4 now and Resident Evil 5, it's just like there's no.
Yeah, it's definitely.
There's no element to the kind of thrill.
But they've also changed the story a bit, haven't they? Like, so it's not just primarily your first concept of zombies, is it?
I'm looking forward to this next one, though. Was it Operation Raccoon City, where it's...
That does look interesting, actually.
A lot more actiony, a lot more, well, Left for Dead.
Yeah, they four-player co-opted it up, haven't they?
Yeah.
Interesting way to take Resident Evil. Surprising they haven't done something like this already, to be honest, but I guess they got in there first with a number of light gun games for the Wii, which was an excellent idea, because we all know fucking third party titles so sell so well on that console. Okay, guys, I guess the meat is here, and we're not just talking about my bollocks. Skyrim. Who wants to start?
Let's have your verdict, since you've had the game the least. So,
mate, I've got a handful of fire and a handful of healing.
Carrying a torch doesn't count.
Are you playing it as a mage then?
Yeah, I'm playing it as a Breton mage.
What are you playing as, Harim?
I'm playing a wood elf sneaking archer.
See, I'm in the same vein, but I'm gonna really put myself down. Whatever the cat people are, one of them.
A catkin or fucking catfin or something, are they?
Yeah, I'm for one of them. Same thing, stealthy archer.
Yeah, I think that's the way to go for the first playthrough, to explore the game properly, and because you just go into places a little bit differently than you would a mage with healing on one hand and fire on the other, wouldn't you say, Deckard?
A handful of fire and a handful of Vaseline, mate. That's the way to do it. That's the way to move forward. The first thing which really jumped out at me about this game is how much, I guess, slicker may be a word I'll use, the presentation is. Like, the idea that the game starts off immediately with you in a scenario which you don't know what's going on, and the exposition is given by people talking around you to you to a certain extent. And it's only when you're being called to your execution and someone addresses you by name that you get the opportunity to choose your character. And I actually found that quite nice, actually.
Yeah, I thought it was a good intro. It reminded me a bit of Half-Life to some extent, you know, like as you're coming on the train.
That's the thing, though. I've never been a big fan of that kind of, oh, you wake up and the situation's already started around you.
Yeah, it's like a rolling start in a racing game, isn't it? Yeah.
You can get away with that with Half-Life because they've kind of put the story in place with the whole thing of you being put there for a reason. Do you know what I mean? Like by G-Man and so on and so forth. But with things like Skyrim, it's like, oh yeah, you wake up on a wagon on your way to your execution. It's like, well, hang on, why have I been involved in this, and so on. And obviously you've been taken with the rebels, but it didn't really hover that much, I thought.
There's not, but particularly when you're playing with a broad game world, though, there's not too many options, is there? I mean, if we just think about it, you can take the Zelda approach, where, you know, you try and wake up in your day-to-day and then you spend a couple of hours fucking around with goats, which isn't, you know, that's not particularly stimulating. Or you can have your sort of Star Wars, you know, movie start, where you have the rolling script across the screen, like force feeding you exposition. That's probably another thing you can do. Or I guess you can do the rolling start. I'm not sure that there's too many other ways that you can do that. What do you guys think?
I don't think there is many options that you could pick. You know, you've got to start somewhere at some point of the game, and obviously you could say that, you know, you're halfway through something and you wake up and you're on your way to your execution, but it's sort of like, you know, you don't want to be there since they're, you know, a child, like just born, and play through a nursery. Yes,
it does always bring through that thing of how far back do you go to explain what's happening. I think
it's about, I think Valve get this right, and Irrational Games get this right as well, in the sense that there's some really, really clever stuff you can do with the environment, which informs the player of what's going on. Like at the beginning of Bioshock, when you come out of the bathysphere, you can immediately tell what's going on in Rapture, you know, not only because Atlas is talking to you, but because, you know, as you're walking through this completely demolished underwater former utopia. You can see placards and banners and newspapers on the floor, which give you a little bit of insight into what's going on. And obviously, you know, in Left 4 Dead, in the safe rooms, on the walls, all that type of stuff, they do the same thing. So I'm almost thinking now a really good place where I might have started Skyrim would have literally been when my head was on the chopping block looking sideways at the executioner, and then the dragon lands like that. You know, that might have been something that I did, but obviously they've got a whole bunch of lore that they need to crowbar in.
Yeah, I think they just needed the build up for what side you're going to choose, don't they, sort of thing. So you can either go with the people that are putting you on the chopping block, or obviously go against them. So
I didn't even realise you had that choice at the beginning. I was just running from a dragon, as far as I was aware.
They put you with someone guys from the Empire, though, don't you? Or is that... Yeah, you get a choice of following two people, do you?
Well, through the town, when you're running from the dragon, you're following an Imperial.
Yeah.
But before that, you're talking to someone on the cart. And obviously, then the dragon comes down and saves you, practically.
Yeah.
Not its intention. But as you're running through town, the Imperial's like, this is your only way to live. Like, if you follow me, blah, blah, blah. A bit like Arnie. And then you get to the final bit in the town. Like, you're going into the castle and there's two doors. And the Imperial's like, come this way. Like, come through this door. And then on the other side...
If you want to live, is that... Yeah. Does he say that at any point?
I think he did, yeah.
Excellent.
So... And then on the other side of the castle, there's the guy that you was on the cart with. He's like, forget those Imperials. Like, save your skin, mate.
Oh, I have to start it in now.
So who have you actually gone with?
Imperial.
So how have you guys made this choice? Because I've left everyone. I've left that fucker, and I'm just wandering around doing stuff now. Like, what are you forced to make that choice at some point?
You haven't run into the castle yet. Is that what you're saying?
No, I haven't run into the castle yet.
what
castle?
No. You still got right at the beginning when you run into the barracks or the fort or whatever it is to escape from the dragon.
But I haven't made any choice. I'm just running around. Like, I'm not aware of a choice that I've made.
Which means he's probably on with the Imperial then as well.
Yeah, because on your compass, it will show you two different arrows, like, for your, obviously, your objective.
But are you telling me I'm actually locked into something now?
I'm not sure if you can change it as you go on, but that's something you'll need to explore in your world of Skyrim, mate.
Mm. I suppose only later on you'll find how much of a choice it is, I suppose.
Yeah.
Why don't you put 90 hours into the main quest? And if it doesn't work out for you, just go back and do it again.
Mate, yeah. I'll tell you what, I've got an S rank on Fallout 3. Every single achievement, I think there's 90 of them with all the DLC included. That is the most amount of time I'm going to put into an open world game. And it is also one of my top three games of this generation. I find choices now put me off to a certain extent. Like in New Vegas, they prompt you quite heavily to make some sort of choice. To join one of the factions, and I find it putting me off because once again it comes back to that bad habit I was talking about earlier, where I have a completionist mindset as a gamer, and I'm not thinking I'm making a choice to benefit me in this way. I'm thinking I'm losing this amount of content by doing this. So I really struggle with that, actually. I think it's a malaise. It's a disease of the modern gamer to a certain extent. It's wanting to see all the content, you know, and this comes down to achievements as well. And I was saying before, at a certain point, I want to do like a quite achievement focused podcast, but I don't like choice now, which is kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that, to be honest. Like, even in Fallout, I'll be playing it and I'll do a quest, and it's not even, you know, like a big faction or something. It's sort of just taking sides in an argument between like two people in the town, but it sort of just ends up with half of the town being killed off, sort of thing, like dependent on who you choose. And so I'll pick one side, and then straight after the quest I'll go, thank you, here's this item, sort of thing. But I'll sort of just get straight on my laptop to find out how the quest could have went if I went the other way.
Yeah,
which is a bit annoying.
It is. What do you think, Dredd?
It's what multiple saves are for, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't think you should be forced into saves as well.
That's... You shouldn't. I was about to say, on Fallout 3, I did the multiple save thing, and I tracked it very carefully, and I was actually making notes of which save was where in terms of overall plot progression and stuff like that. But, you know, interesting stuff does pop out of it. Like, every time I needed to lower my karma in Fallout 3, I would go and do what I called the Massacre of Megaton, where, you know, I could have as much good karma, you know, I could be completely 100% angelic, but I would go into Megaton with my rocket launcher or whatever gun that I needed to have, and I would just kill everyone. Like, and they'd just all be running around like the fucking cowboy sheriff. What are you doing?
You wouldn't want to just set off the bomb then in the middle of Megaton, though.
I did that a couple of times as well. But, you know, I'm a sociopath. I'm kind of a hands-on sociopath. I want to see the light, you know, extinguish in your eyes if I'm going to kill you. You know, I want to see you vaporize into smoke. That's bullshit. You know, I want to, as a knife goes in, hang on. This is going out onto the internet.
Sure. Yeah.
But yeah, I'm finding now as a gamer who doesn't have as much time as he used to have that I will prefer something like an Uncharted experience over something like a Skyrim. But you know, I'm still going to play it. I don't like thinking that I've not done everything.
I think maybe that's how they get around, you know, like how long it takes to make a game sort of thing. Because it probably takes them a lot less time to just make you decide between two things that in reality don't really make that much of a difference than make more content which is linear that everyone gets to play.
Yeah. And then because none of us have really played too far into the game, we're not doing the thing which other people are doing on their podcast, which is, you know, fucking swapping stories of these amazing, like these amazing occurrences which have happened like just randomly for no particular reason, like a fucking horse fighting a dragon or whatnot.
I just had to fight the dragon.
Yeah, but were you a horse at the time?
Well, there were two giants. I can't say what I was, but...
Ooh.
What, you fucking dressed in stilettos or something? Like, what's going on here?
There was some particular clothes that were purchased for dragon hunting.
Purchased. There was stilettos involved. If I'm going to hunt a dragon, I'm going to be one wearing a thong. That's, you know, that's legit.
What, in the real world or in, you know?
Both.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's how it should be.
When I say dragon, I don't mean fucking Dirty Hilda from down the local. Everyone's had a go on Hilda.
And Terry.
Terry with an I, not of a Y, because that's just bad news all round, mate, all round.
We were careful, sometimes they're one and the same.
Fucking hell, mate. Hermaphrodites are us.
Oh, dear. Anyway, back on point.
So, I haven't had too much experience with it, although I've talked quite a lot about it. I hope you like the way I did that. Tell me some more stuff about Skyrim, man. Tell me what's going on.
Do you know what, the last thing I did was, what was it? I've not really played it that much, unfortunately, because I have been sidetracked by the other things that have been out, i.e. Assassin's Creed and all that. But I've only just learnt your first, I don't know, is it your first shout or your first voice power?
Yeah.
Yeah, shout.
Yeah, I've just learned that one, and then I've just heaped it in sidetracks with every side quest possible. It's one of the biggest, I think one of the biggest bugbears in this game is there's always more and more side quests for you to do, and I'm one of these people where, like you say, a bit of a completionist, I try and do everything.
What's the quality of the side quests? Are they well written?
They're not shabby, definitely. They are worth doing because there is a certain degree of maybe some world information involved in it, as well as, I like some of them as well. I found one of them when you go into the barrows, the first barrows you go to where you learn where the shout is, one of them's kind of tied into that quest as it is.
Yeah.
So it's well worth trying to find them and picking them up.
And is it stuff that you're just literally tripping over as you're doing like bigger main quests or whatever, or is it something you have to go out of your way to find, or a mixture of both maybe?
It's both. There's definitely a kind of, yeah, some of them are involving the main quest, and then some of them are just you're having to travel a fair distance to pick this one up.
And you've still got people running up to you in the middle of the street, I take it?
I've had one person ask me in the middle of the street and say, oh, you need to help me with this. And then I just went and screwed him over anyway, but yeah.
Cool. Corinne, what about you?
I haven't really done that many side quests yet. I've done a bit more reading, sort of thing, and I've heard like the rewards you get from a lot of the quests like scale with your level, which is kind of my issue with how I play these games, because you know, if I'm going to get a really nice piece of armor now, it's only going to get better in a sense. So sort of like what I'm doing is I've already heard like you know, like with the guilds and stuff, they've got like the Thief's Guild, and the rewards from that are probably at the max level some of the best armor in the game, and it's sort of, I'm kind of holding off on that content until it is the best it can be.
But then, yeah, there's all that the leveling and that type of shit in these games is really curious, isn't it? Like it's almost a game to figure out how you play the game.
Yeah, because like they say, you know, you can craft in this, and that, like obviously if you craft, you can get some of the best armor like quite quickly.
Yeah.
But if you level your smithing too high, then you scale the monsters. So it's sort of like you might not be able to hit anything like properly and do much damage, yeah. But you'll have the best armor on, but the enemies will be able to hurt you for a substantial amount, I'd say. Which is a bit weird. Yeah, I guess in that respect, it's like Oblivion as well, because obviously you've got your major and minor skills, but in this they've kind of taken it away, but sort of locked you into leveling everything equally anyway. I sound quite negative, actually.
Well, you think really deeply about these games, man. I just run around and try and find elven princesses who don't have them that many clothes on, to be honest.
No guards protecting them, I suppose.
Nah, mate. I will kill the guards whenever need be.
But, I mean, I'm enjoying Skyrim. It's the graphics are a lot better than Oblivion. I mean, I haven't even played more than half an hour of Oblivion because I thought the graphics were that bad, and I'm not really one for saying, you know, like I won't play a game because of the graphics, but I thought Oblivion was that bad after playing Fallout, and the, you know, like the armor system and all that was so complicated.
Yeah,
like, and it sort of felt like how they did Mass Effect 1 as well, you know, like you just had too many of the same item with just one extra stat difference or sort of thing, and on a console I don't really need that. I think the more simplified but with good armor and stuff like that is what I want from these sort of games. Like, I do like the unique items as opposed to the random generator.
Okay, cool. So I guess we each of us will be playing more.
Yeah, I mean,
I'd like to fix that
dragon
anyway.
Hunting.
Once I'm bored of Assassin's Creed, I think that'll be it.
I'm not sure you'll ever get bored of Assassin's Creed, mate.
This is the worst thing, is I'm off out to buy Saints Row in the morning as well.
Oh, but Saints Row sounds like it's fucking awesome.
Have you played any of them?
No. But I want to play this one.
You've royally missed out. The second one, like, one of the best things about the second one was as a few of us used to play it in Xbox Live, there was a game mode called Protect the Pimp, which was basically like a team deathmatch game, but one team had a pimp, and the other team's objective was to kill the pimp, and the other team had, like, obviously your team had to get the pimp to the exit.
This sounds the best like thing, the most ridiculous.
No. Whenever and any, I could be playing Modern Warfare, mate, or call any sort of Battlefield game. I play it as if I'm the pimp.
Right,
this is standard.
This is how it works, right? Obviously, the main players had 8 Hazen and all that. The pimp wandered around with his pimp suit on and his pimp hat, and he just had on his right hand, he just had a massive, like, basically across his whole fist ring that said pimp on it.
Yes.
And as the pimp, if you pimp smack someone, it's a one shot kill.
Of course it is.
So you just run up to someone, right, literally, and they'll be hiding around the corner waiting for you to come around. You just sprint to them.
Yeah,
exactly. And they pull out their AK-47 or whatever it is that you have, and you just pimp slap them.
Yeah. That was it. That's all it needed. It was just one pimp slap. It's like, bitch, head down.
That's the way forward, mate.
Seriously, I hope the multiplayer in this is as fun as that was, because that was an extremely enjoyable thing. The only problem is, obviously, because Saints Row wasn't that big at number 2 and so on, it was peer-to-peer. So, it wasn't
the host next... advantage.
Exactly. Yeah, if the host was the pimp, he won.
Mate, the host is always the pimp for the purposes of that game, I like to think. I'm sad that I missed it. I will be picking up Saints Row 3, actually. I'm not sure how to deal with Skyrim, like, because I will be playing Zelda on the 18th of November. I've been looking forward to it for tomorrow for a significant amount of time. I'm proper Nintendo, like proper Nintendo'd up, man. The older I get, the more I appreciate Nintendo games, and the way they're designed is fucking amazing. I'm really looking forward to the Nintendo Wii U, actually. I've been thinking about design a lot recently. I'm reading the Steve Jobs biography. Do you remember the Apple dude who died, Dread, from the other podcast?
The Apple dude.
Yeah, the Apple dude. So I felt quite bad about that, and I heard quite good things about this book, and it's really something special, actually, like reading experiences of this man, like from the worst things that he would do continuously on the fucking reg, mate, like on a regular basis, like walking down to a, you know, one of the competing divisions, like, and leaning over someone's cubicle and just looking at them going, do you know what? Everything you've done in your life up until this moment is meaningless. You're a waste. Come and work for me. And the people would go and work for him. If I did that, I'd be sacked, like, in about 20 seconds. So anyway, I've been thinking a lot about design because, you know, a lot of Steve Jobs and Apple's success comes down to their industrial design, you know, of their products, of the MacBook, of the iPhone, of the iPad. There are two things which makes these products really successful. It's the end-to-end integration of the software and the hardware. And, you know, most people say a closed system is a bad thing, but they seem to have made it work. And the way that these devices are put together, like, beautifully. And the reason that I'm telling you that about Steve Jobs is one of the things that he said is he said to his board of directors, he wanted something to happen. I think he wanted a certain amount of money, or he wanted something to happen. And they were umming and ahhing over it. They wanted him to come back. And they were umming and ahhing over a certain condition he'd made. And he'd gone to them, guys, look, I'm going to fucking walk right now, he said, because the decision that you're about to make is trivial compared to the 1,000 decisions I have to make about the next product we're putting together. Like, so you either take it or leave it. And obviously they brought him back. And I feel that when Nintendo are making games, they make very, very, very clever decisions, continuous decisions. And I genuinely think now, you know, from reflecting on how games are made, and also from what I'm reading, particularly in a Steve Jobs book, any successful venture or product is simply the culmination of 100 good decisions. Like, and that's it. Do you know what I mean?
To a degree. I mean, the one thing I always found about Apple products is they make things simple. And that always seems to be the real key to their draw, almost. And they were always really good at taking ideas, which I think half the time, if you have already been done, uh-huh, with things like tablet PCs and smartphones and so on, but they make them accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
That's where their success has lied, definitely.
And part of that, because, you know, he was all about simplicity, and he'd ask them to iterate over and over and over again. And, you know, Steve Jobs was basically, he was kind of a binary dude. Everything was, it was either super awesome or it was shit. And he used to tell people that, like, you're shit, your product's shit. You don't work anymore, you're shit. There was no kind of middle ground, or like you're super awesome. And he was always on about simplifying, simplicity, let's simplify it. And I guess a lot of that came down to the fact that, you know, he wanted a closed system. He wanted to own the hardware. He wanted to own the software. He wanted to own the portable device, which would tie into it. He wanted to own the software, which would interact between those things. So while companies like Microsoft were trying to do open platforms, you know, to a lesser extent, open sources, he was all about, no, fucking close it all off. I don't want them to be able to open the devices. There's not going to be any screwdriver, ports on the outside. It's all closed. And that's one of the things which allow you to control the environment, isn't it?
But is that ultimately going to be their downfall, the fact that it doesn't integrate well with other other items and so on? Because I mean, if you think about it, they are trying to corner the market with like the cloud and so on and so forth. Like that's their new thing where you can go from device to device. But one of the things that's always been like about PCs is you can integrate so many different devices into it, like so many different attachments that come onto it. Whereas Apple is, once you're in Apple, you're in Apple for it almost, it seems like. Do you know what I mean?
It's a closed ecosystem. It's a walled garden. But we're getting to the point where most things are. You know, you look at your Microsoft service. You know, look at your Xbox Live. Look at your PSN. Look at your iOS. Windows, not so much. But things are being built in silos now. And I think the pendulum's going to swing back on this at a certain point, and there will become diminishing returns because, you know, developers are really happy now with the platform of iOS because you can put together a game for a very small amount of money of a very small team and be assured that, you know, you're going to be on their system. But it can't end well, can it?
What's the thing as well is it the case now with Apple that now that they've lost Steve Jobs, unfortunately, how they did, was he really the helmman that
he was yeah. Mate, he some of the stuff that he did, like some of the shit that he pulled, it's like, fuck me, like no one else would have got away with it. Like it was only him. He was the only person who could do this, you know, to the point where people would stop competing with him, stop competing with the products, just so they didn't have to interact with him. Do you know what I mean? Just so they wouldn't have to interact with that man. Like, you know, flying to your suppliers in Japan and everywhere else and just saying, you know, your supply chain shit, your product shit. Like, if you don't sort that out, we're not going to do business with you. And inevitably, people would resign in the top management positions of those corporations. People would come up and they'd get it done. Like, one of the key themes of this book is that, you know, his fabled reality distortion field. He would get stuff done, stuff which was considered impossible, by just denying it was impossible. Like, just saying it had to be done, and it fucking got done. Like, it's a really good book, man. I can recommend it quite strongly.
I may have to give it a read, but I've never been Apple's biggest fan.
Me either. I mean, I just think, just looking at it as one of the, you know, if you just look at it as the individual who's one of the technological pioneers of the 21st century, it's amazing.
They're currently on their Children in Need as well, guys.
Brilliant. Oh, mate, I would. Do you know how much money I would give to fucking Lenny Henry? I would mortgage my house. I don't even have a house. I'd buy a house
and then mortgage it.
To mortgage it to give Lenny Henry the money if I could see the actual children in need queue up to call Bono a cunt.
I was thinking you were going to say to see Lenny Henry knock him out, but that'd be more fun.
Yeah, no, fucking. I would also pay a large stipend to see Lenny Henry get his fat missus to crunch him.
Are they not together anymore? Are they
not together anymore?
I'm pretty sure they got divorced.
You know, there's a whole sub-human species of people who like really fat women laying on top of them. It's got a particular name. I think it's crushing.
Isn't that thing where you get women to stand on your bollocks?
Maybe. No, that's ball crushing. Maybe I'm getting it mixed up.
Maybe it's the same thing. Just
okay, amazing. Before you guys go, I want to show you an image of something.
Come on.
Hang on. Talk amongst yourselves. Fucking hell, man.
Is it going to be crushing it then?
No. This comes back to something we were talking about. It's kind of Japanophile. It's kind of hentai related. And that was episode 10 of the High Level Playcast. I have been your host, Deku49.
Number two.
I was number two. Hold on. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Argue about being two. Like, it's true. This podcast is not a toilet.
Feels like it sometimes, the amount of shit that comes out of it.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Take it easy.
See you later, guys. Bye.